will propagate the July 2nd, 2009 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the first rain report for July 2009. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. If you haven't been tuning around 10 or 6 meters lately, you've missed some pretty cool openings the past several weeks, including Field Day weekend. Is this just a fluke? Could it have something to do with June being the peak of the annual sporadic E season? Or maybe, just maybe, it's solar cycle 24, rising like the proverbial phoenix from the ashes of cycle 23, that has had 15 and 10 meters in its deadly grasp for what seems like years. One propagation writer who thinks it might be all of the above is Thomas Hood, NW7US, a contributing editor to CQ, Popular Communications, and CQ VHF magazines.
I appreciate the position of the established professional forecasters in solar science. Their job is to try to make a prediction on what the sun's going to do because they've got a lot of vested interest from a number of sectors. Satellites are affected by solar radiation and plasma in the orbital planes that they exist. Too much of that plasma and the satellites slow down and they lose altitude, hardware gets damaged, whatever. That's just one sector. The power sector is another vested interest in solar propagation forecasting and conditions because power grids can be affected by solar phenomenon. And so these forecasters do their best to try to come up with models that work. But what leads me to be very contrary to going with the popular flow and what's current in the bandwagon is that the sun is millions of years old, and I think it's highly arrogant for anybody in the human race to assume that they have a handle on what that sun's going to do. We have, relatively speaking, in the perspective of millions of years, an extremely short period of time that we've been observing the sun. Dare we say we understand it? Whether we can say we understand reasonably well because our models seem to fit fairly well when we're talking about terrestrial weather. But when we're talking about solar weather, we're talking about this huge ball of phenomenon that we're still not even sure all of the dynamics of what's going on. We don't have the ability to go into the depths of the sun physically and understand the inner workings of the sun. Amazing discoveries are being made all the time. This last solar cycle, cycle 23, huge progress has been made in understanding certain dynamics that are able to be witnessed in real time. For instance, just recently, there's been a release of discovery that these scientists have made in being able to penetrate slightly below the visible surface of the sun and discover that there's a jet stream. And what they've discovered over the course of the data that they've analyzed is that the jet stream moves from one region of the sun to the next over a period of time. And this particular solar minimum, that progression from the high latitudes down to the equator is a bit slower than usual. Nevertheless, that movement of the jet stream internal to the sun still took place. There's a lot of sensationalism in the press. I think people just need something to distract themselves from the reality of daily living and the economics of the time, whatever might be going on. And so they look to the sky for something interesting to take their mind off of the daily grind. And the idea of an ice age and all these phenomenal, sensational stories come to the surface anytime something goes a little unusual. But if we look back even at the history that we have been able to observe, we see that there are solar cycles that are much longer than 11 years, and we know that there are solar minimums that don't last just 1 or 2 years. There are some that last longer. It's just that in the last few solar cycles, for instance, I'm only 40-some years old, how many life cycles of these approximate 11-year cycles have I personally been able to witness with a cognate mind? I mean, I'm not able to witness it when I'm 4 years old, but surely when I'm a teenager onward, I'm able to see what's going on with the solar cycle. So in that minimum time, I don't see a solar minimum taking 2 or 3 years. But that's such a small perspective. So it comes back to this arrogance that somehow we have a handle on what's going on. But there's no way we can. We don't have enough data. We're just making wild guesses. Now, that's the job of a scientist. Make a plausible guess, see if it sticks, change your model if it doesn't. So that's all they're doing. They're making educated guesses, but the educated guess is not much of an education because they don't have enough data. they'd have to have millions of years of data to really figure out what's truly going on with the sun. Nevertheless, we've seen since May a number of spots all of a sudden occurring. Why? Well, they said the jet stream is finally reaching the latitude on the sun that generates sunspots. So the minimum is drawing to a close. I predict, totally uneducated guess, that we'll see more of these spots as the year progresses and we're finally on the upswing. The data does bear that out so far. It's slow. Nevertheless, it's an uptick.
I'm speaking today with Thomas Hood, NW7 US, a contributing editor and propagation writer for CQ Popular Communications and for the quarterly CQ VHF magazine. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report. Are your predictions that different from publicized predictions of other solar scientists?
I'm more optimistic because anecdotal evidence shows that the scientists are more often wrong in their predictions than they are right.
I saw propagation on 10 and 6 that I haven't seen in years on field day. I actually had a contact from here in Chicago to San Diego on 10 Saturday evening. I haven't talked to the West Coast on 10 in literally some years. The anomalies we saw over field day weekend, were those created being the peak of the sporadic e-season, June and July, or were they possibly caused by the new solar activity that we've been hearing about the last few weeks?
Yeah, and that is a good question. We've seen, I believe, a pretty good sporadic e-season this year. And I believe that a good portion of the activity we've been seeing on these higher bands, 10 meters, 6 meters, is due to sporadic e-activity. We've just got a really good season going. But it's also possible other things are taking place. I'll get theoretical for a moment here. The modeling software that exists that's pretty current for PCs and Macs, commonplace on amateur desktops, drives from an engine that's created by the Voice of America called VioCap. Embedded in that model is an incredible amount of data and research over many years that's been tweaked and refined based on observation over the course of many years. But again, that data is averaged in such a way that when you model a circuit between, say, Chicago and California, you're seeing with the variables that are used the best fit of that data for what that circuit's going to do on a particular frequency given a particular solar flux or sunspot number and the proper antenna, etc., all the different variables that go into that equation. But it's a best fit. The reality of the situation is the ionosphere is not a single reflective surface. It's not a mirror. It is a vastly complex mix of surfaces. Take a bundle of silk, a big swath of silk, and ball it all up, and you have various contours going on. The ionosphere is always changing and fluxing. And so it may be, even with low solar activity, that a particular moment in time, that ionosphere could, given just the right angles of incidence and just the right energy, refract a signal. Those are really short-lived, but they can exist. There's an interesting network of amateur radio operators operating something called PropNet. And if you look at PropNet every day and look at their result maps that are online, just look up in Google for PropNet, PROPNET. And they have these online maps that show you in real time the reporting stations, what those stations are hearing. And you'll see these networks on, let's say, 10 meters, and you'll see openings that most people think there would be no opening during this low part of the solar cycle. And yet we're seeing these anomalies that exist, and we discover it might just be possible that even with low solar spot activity, there are possibilities of openings on these higher frequencies. They could even be combinations, a little bit of those anomalies, a little bit of sporadic E, and you've got this amazing opening. The thing is, if you're not on the band and you're not trying to work it, and if nobody's there, you'll never know. And that's what these PropNet people have discovered. If you're there and you're working it, you'll discover it. And that's the exciting thing. If anything is coming out of this prolonged solar cycle minimum, it's the discovery that a lot more can happen during a solar cycle minimum than people thought before. We've just never had in our lifetime the opportunity to witness that.
This has been part one of a conversation about the birth of solar cycle 24 between Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, and Thomas Hood, NW7US, contributing editor and propagation writer for CQ Popular Communications and CQ VHF magazines. What about the prospects for some 10 and 6 openings this fall? We'll hear what Thomas has to say about that next week. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.